Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on Apple Podcasts.
Dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, dumpty, da, da, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum, dumpty, diddly, dumpty, dumpty, diddly, dum, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum.
This is Dumpty Dum, a weekly podcast about the archers and the goings-on in Ambridge. I'm Stephen Bowden, who doesn't need to be addressed as my Lord Mayor.
And I'm Bernadette Hawkes. It's too good to be turned down for any job on.
And then there's you, our lovely Dumpty Dummers, who are all out for 172. Doable. Definitely doable. Welcome to Dumpty Dum, a show about our favourite country village. This week's episodes were written by Nick Warburton. I think it's fair to say they weren't to everybody's taste. Coming up, we have calls from Globetrotting Richard, who has been pondering the tree surgery sector.
Darcy from Northern California, who has views on that episode.
Witherspoon, who, among other things, has advice for Alice.
Another Richard, also known as Pico Prop, who also has thought about what happened on Wednesday.
Marie from Winchester, who thinks Brad has been treated unfairly.
Jen from Brooklyn, who has been catching up with past Dumpty Dum.
Helen, who called twice, with views on Wednesday night, but also with thoughts inspired by the return of Mick.
And Claire from Clapham, who is worried about Alice.
We also have an email from our regular correspondent, Chris, in Indiana. Plus, we have The Week in Ambridge by Suey, a roundup of the Dumpty Dum Facebook group from Michelle, and the Tweets of the Week from Theo. Before we start talking too much, let's remind ourselves of what happened over the last 7 days with a roundup of The Week in Ambridge from Suey.
Hello, lovely people. It's Suey here, Queen Otter on the Twitters. And all that malarkey. Well, time for a reminder of This Week in Ambridge. There was a win in the cricket on Sunday after Hannah knocked one for 4 runs. Possibly as a reward, Chris agreed to go out with her on Tuesday. Lillian and Kate accused Alice of drinking again, so she took Kate to her doctor's appointment, which didn't go down well with Azra, who warned Alice off helping other people. She lied a lot to other people to go to an AA meeting with Harry, who was a manipulative little bleep. Hannah did not get her date with Chris, who looked after his own child instead. By Friday, Harry was drinking again, and Alice had to go to the rescue, lying to Lillian again, who I think has noticed. She can't do it anymore, apparently. We'll see how long she keeps up that resolve. At Grey Gables, they prepared for the Lord Mayor turning up. Harrison tried to be bribed by Oliver, but Oliver offered up a measly bottle. Sorry, not even a whole bottle, a half bottle of champagne. I cannot bring myself to listen again to the Brian Ricks misdirected comedy of errors on Wednesday. It was farcical indeed. There were tacky Brian nylon fancy dress costume swap suitcases, and people did not look at the suitcase labels. Chelsea did Fallon's hair, and then she played Natasha and Kenton off against each other for jobs in the tea room and the bull. She wants more money. They say they're not going to give it her. My money's on Chelsea winning. Brad tried to follow Lily's instructions and ended up getting his knickers in a twist over Mick and a swirly pastry. Oh dear. Mick got the job, so obviously they worked some magic. Lillian and Alice had a heart-to-heart, and Alice can face the world again. Kirsty showed up for Primrose Day, and they got their money's worth with Mick turning up for a second day. But the mayor turned out to be gluten-free, so she couldn't eat the primrose cake. Meek went to the rescue with a trip to the tea room for some gluten-free buns. No bloody primroses, as the kids had pinched them, so a new winding path had to be laid. Meek to the rescue again. He wants to snuggle up with Joy. Oh, that's what you call getting your money's worth. Well, I can barely wait for next week. I believe it'll be a different script writer and no repeat of Wednesday. Hurrah.
Thank you for that, Suey. So, Bernadette, welcome to the co-hosting chair. How's the last week been treating you?
Well, you might have picked up from Twitter that I've had a dreadful week in terms of my health. I've got norovirus. I know who gave it to me. I have yet to speak to them. And so consequently, I've spent quite a lot of time in bed and in the bathroom. But I won't say any more about that. And, well, fate, the Arctis wasn't that inspiring on the road back to the hotel. But I won't say any more about that either, at least not at the moment. And what sort of week have you had?
I think I've had a better week than you health-wise. I'm still slightly recovering from the cold I had the previous week, but that's pretty much cleared up. And after all the long-running saga of my new kitchen, work started on my new ensuite bathroom this week. I'm hoping that won't last quite as long as the kitchen work. It should be done in a couple of weeks' time, which will be terribly exciting for me, but not maybe for anybody else.
For the kitchen's finished, then?
The kitchen is well finished, yes. I've been baking away in it and generally enjoying it. I haven't used a deep-fat fryer. Having gone to the trouble of getting an integrated deep-fat fryer, I haven't used it yet because I just haven't had the opportunity to cook anything quite that unhealthy. But I'm sure that will come. Donuts, probably.
All right. I have had my kitchen painted. It's a tiny kitchen. And it took 3 coats of kale broth.
The kale colour. Broth?
It's a very dark green, but not
a very British
green
farm
green.
Colour.
Probably. It's soup, isn't it? Oh, God. Oh, well. Let's move
right,
on.
I think that's enough about us. And let's get on to the important bit, which is you, our lovely caller inners.
Hello, Tiger.
And first up, we have globe-trotting Richard.
Hi, Richard here, calling in from, well, soon to be in Cambridge, which is globe-trotting by my standards. I think George can occasionally be quite intelligent. It's as if he wants to make a good impression, he wants to appear nice, he can. And I still remember the evil, thuggish tone when he was getting Hannah evicted. You can't say things like that and not have a thoroughly evil streak. Is he dumb enough to try and organise an acid attack? I'm not sure. But that leads me nicely onto the chainsaw tree surgery plotline. Who needs acid when there's a chainsaw in the family? And I've been pondering that business. It's not the easiest thing to do. You can find tree surgery businesses for sale all over the internet and businesses for sale for about their annual profit, presumably because a lot of people don't want to be doing what tree surgeons do. There aren't any national chains and all sorts of risks and liabilities. You need licenses to use chainsaws, as wood chippers climbing up to dangerous heights issues. And of course, we remember the tragic death of Nigel. Well, there's so much capacity for nasty accidents with chainsaws and trees. It doesn't bear thinking about. I think that one's going to run and run. I do wonder what the advice Brian or Justin gave. At the moment, they're busy spending money. And, you know, if I was trying to get into this business, I think I'd spend the first weeks or months calling up potential clients. One family issue I'm involved in is involved the sale of a field which can't be maintained because of the cost of bringing in tree surgeons. So maybe they should be calling solicitors for referrals. Bye.
Well, that's Richard. In globe-trotting to Cambridge, a tree surgery business. Well, I could go on and on about that, but I keep hoping that there will be a good outcome, but the path that seems to be going on won't necessarily bring that on. But Richard has said some sensible things about research and talking to other tree surgeons, which they did. They did speak to Jamie. I don't know. And as for George, why anything's a weapon for George, a tree chopper, whatever you call it, if just another weapon in the armory. Potential,
yes. Of course, we do have not just Nigel falling off a roof, but a genuine tree surgery death from many years ago. when Jethro Larkin was killed by a falling branch when he was working on a tree with David. So it doesn't have a great back history. I was struck by Richard's comment that there are no national tree surgery chains. I'd never actually thought about that before, but it may be a telling point that all of these businesses are small independent concerns, because it must be a very local and quite precarious business to be in.
Yeah, I was struck by that, because I have used a tree surgery in a previous property, but he came from the other side of London. I was in East London. He came from West London. I don't know. That was a long time ago.
Well, not much has moved on since then. Let's move on to our next call, and this one is from Darcy.
Hi, this is Darcy in Northern California. Hello to Dumpty Dummers all over the world. As far as this week's scripts, let's just say control, out, delete. Mostly delete. So that's all I've got to say, because I'm trying to be polite and not use bad words. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for that call, Darcy. I have a feeling, well, I know that you're not going to be the only person with views on this week's script. I think Nick Warburton is a script writer who sometimes people really love and sometimes people really can't get on with. And I fear that this week was one where most people just didn't get on with him. I know a few people have said they really enjoyed the humorous scenes, but I think that most of our calls are going to suggest that that was a minority view. Did you like them, Benedict?
No. I'm going to say more, but no, it's a definitive answer. In my notes, I've described it as the dreadful episode. The night away was okay. Harrison waxing lyrical about not doing chores. And then they get to Grey Gables, and then they're, wow, what was the script writer thinking?
One of the things I found remarkable about that was that they employed a really good comic actress to play the Lord Mayor of Felpersham. It's Helen Atkinson Wood, who's a lot of people know as Mrs. Miggins from the third series of Blackadder.
I didn't get the connection.
But she's had a long history of doing very good comic radio. And she was, I think, completely wasted. She wasn't given any decent lines. Just the way she said Malcolm every time she mentioned her husband, that was probably funnier than all the funny lines given to Lily, and in particular given to Brad, who I thought was really ill-served. But I think we'll have other people talking about that.
Yeah, I did pick up on the Malcolm bit, and I thought, well, what's the significance of that? But I'm going to blame the fact that I still wasn't 100% well for not picking up on that, really.
It was just the way she said it, constantly referring to Malcolm doing this and Malcolm doing that. And of course, we never heard Malcolm at all. He was just in the background, a sort of oppressed husband or something like that, always trailing in her wake. But that was left to our imagination. And it was easier to imagine Malcolm than it was really to picture Lily and Brad doing what they were doing.
Well, I disagree with that slightly, because I had my head in my hands when I opened radio. I was cringing, sat and thinking, where is this going? Why are they doing this? Why are they doing this to Brad? And then, what's he doing ordering him about in that way anyway? Because she's only an intern, isn't she?
Yes, I'm not quite sure what the situation is, but she's basically doing whatever Oliver asks her to do and getting work experience.
She doesn't need work experience. She needs the Maranoxley and has a bit of that, not a lot.
Yeah, it's all a bit weird. Shall we move on then to a very familiar caller in up next? And it starts like this.
Y'all know how this goes. Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling, tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
Greetings, Bernadette, Stephen, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. So the question on many minds is, was Wednesday's episode the worst episode ever? I can't answer that, as I've only been listening for 15 years. But as far as I can remember, it was the worst episode that I've ever heard. As I wrote on the socials, so cringeworthy. I was already angry at Lily for trying to steal business from Grey Gables after Oliver had been so nice to her. But it was naive of Oliver to have taken her on in the first place. Agreeing with Stephen here, what did the scriptwriters do to Brad? We know he's somewhere on the socially anxious to autistic scale, I think more the former than the latter, but he's not a nincompoop as he was written in the episode. Then Fallon and Harrison, please. Did not need to hear about their planned sexual hijinks Was all this just the humorous appetizer to a much more dramatic main dish? Well, it wasn't funny. On to more serious stuff, Alice and Harry. I don't feel like Alice is being manipulated by Harry, or at least she should be able to ward off his attempts at it. Alice, are you being driven by misplaced guilt about breaking up with Harry, concerned because his family has abandoned him, or the need to fix a fellow alcoholic? As a result, you're acting like what's called a dry drunk, concealing information from your sponsor, lying to Chris, your sister, and your aunt. Let's be clear, you should not be acting as a sponsor to your ex, and you should have immediately spoken to your own sponsor. Given all that, at the least you could have done was tell your family and Chris that you have a new sponsee that has needed your help, but instead you made up lies that can easily be sussed out. Harry finally sensed that Alice wasn't acting appropriately and gave her an out. She seemed to finally agree to back off, but I'm not convinced. Trouble remains ahead. Talk to you soon.
Oh, thank you, Eleanor Witherspoon. As a former psychotherapist myself, I agree with virtually everything that Witherspoon has said. There will be trouble ahead, as the song said. Going back to the cringe-worthy stuff, who takes costumes to a hotel? You leave them at home, surely. The maid Marion and Sheriff of Nottingham. You don't take that. You're only going for one night, unless you're going for a forcing meet-up with other people. But I wouldn't know about that. And what else?
Yes.
No, I can't comment anymore on the Wednesday episode. I'll be here for ages just ranting.
Yes, we've got plenty of other people calling in to rant about it, so I don't think that's going to be a problem. And on Alice, of course, that call came in before Friday's episode, where we had further engagement between Alice and Harry. And I think Witherspoon felt that Harry was trying to give Alice a way out, but I don't think that he was really sincerely doing that. I think he knows he's got Alice slightly wrapped around his little finger and that she will come and go at his beck and call, as things turned out later in the week. And I'm really worried about the business of lying to people and not talking to her sponsor. As Witherspoon said, she really shouldn't be sponsoring somebody with whom she, even though relationship isn't what it was, I'm sure that's a no-no. And certainly lying and not telling her sponsor all seem to be problematic. Do you reckon that that's going to in a good direction now that at least Lillian suspects something?
Well, I think it will, but we might have to endure quite a few episodes before we get there. She should have told her sponsor, and she shouldn't be supporting him. They've been not at really a relationship. One of the other Twitter lovers said as much. They were only together like 5 minutes. Perhaps she's got a rescue mission thing going on, but we'll have to see. I'm trying to be sympathetic towards Alice. A lot of people, I think, aren't, but I'm trying to wear my former professional head and be sympathetic towards her.
Yes, I was trying to be sympathetic to Harry until it turned out he was a completely unreliable drinking liar.
Yeah, but I think it's very hard in these situations because they're trying to pull the choose sides, and I don't want to choose sides particularly, although I think my tweets might say that I'm anti-Harry, but now they are. And he's not very likable.
No, and as Kate has pointed out, his aura is all wrong.
Yeah, I'm with her on that.
Let's move on to our next call, and this one is from another Richard, who has been known as Biffo Prop.
Hello, everybody. It's Richard Beveridge here, Biffo Prop on the Twitters. I do hope you're all very well. I'm back from my annual absence of lying in the long grass, watching Ireland's magnificent performance in the recent Six Nations tournament and for the business end of the refereeing season. I wanted to highlight the brilliant episode on Wednesday, which would have been worthwhile as a Brian Ricks farce and a worthy tribute as well. We had a Lord Mayor who sounds like McDormand. We had misplaced adult toys in the luggage swap. The only things missing, I thought, were Fallon's I'm a Master Baker apron, which she obviously hangs in the wardrobe at home, and also Derek Nimmo appearing in the Grey Gables reception, dressed as a vicar with his foot in a bucket full of plaster. Marvellous episode. Not entirely certain that Brad makes a good recasting as the late Stan Laurel, but more BBC more. Tinkety-tonk.
Tinkety-tonk, Richard. I have a feeling that at least some of that was perhaps slightly sarcastic. I really don't think that you meant every single word of that. I'm not going to say anything about the rugby because I don't believe that Dumpty Dum is a sporting podcast. There are plenty of others. So moving on to Wednesday, we've already discussed that. It was an attempted farce, just not a very good one. And the Archers, every so often, they come up and have one of these comic interludes. And I can't think of a single one that I really enjoyed. It usually ends picking on one of the characters and putting them into a ridiculous situation that they're not usually to be found in. And the main victim this time round was, of course, Brad. And Witherspoon mentioned that Brad is somewhere between social anxiety disorder and autism. And I have long said I don't particularly like medicalizing just variations from normality. Brad absolutely clearly is socially anxious, whether you want to call that a disorder or not. But he isn't stupid. And once Lily had mentioned the labels on the luggage, you would have thought that Brad would have jumped to it and immediately focused on that. So when at the end he claimed that he'd taken a 50-50 punt on which bag to hand to the mayor, wasn't what would have happened. I'm sure he would have carefully checked the labels, made a point of doing so possibly, and then handed the right bag to the mayor. Now, it was lucky that it was the right bag in the end, because otherwise this ridiculous scene would have been dragged out even longer. But it just the way that Brad was portrayed. Yes, Richard described him as a young Stan Laurel, and that's not Brad. Brad is a bright lad, and I just was really disappointed.
I was extremely disappointed, and I raised my Clark war flag up. I thought, this is our peasant. And the other thing is, I listened to it twice. I made myself listen again. If you're going somewhere for one night, do you really put labels on your luggage? I don't. And because you're not going to be parted from it for very long. Someone goes with you to your room. So, I don't know. That just seemed logistically wrong to me after I listened to it again. And it was just too poor, the so-called humour.
Yes. The idea of getting bags mixed up in hotels actually has a long pedigree, and one of my favourite films and one of the funniest films ever made from the late 60s, I think, is called What's Up, Doc? It stars Ryan O'Neill and Barbara Streisand. And at its heart is a whole load of identical suitcases, all of which are picked up and belong to people staying at the same hotel where there are various things going on. And one is full of money from crime. One is Barbara Streisand's rags and so forth. She's a bit of a bohemian and hasn't got much in her bag. Another one has Ryan O'Neill's collections of rock, because he's a paleontologist who believes that Neolithic man made music by banging rocks together, and he's got the rocks that he wants to demonstrate this. And needless to say, they all get mixed up, and given that one of them is full of money, that's the one that everybody is after. That's the police and various gangsters. It's a brilliant farce, and it does that confusing the bags absolutely perfectly. And just trying to do a version of that at Grey Gables, no, didn't work for me at all.
Didn't. It just did not work for me, and I was quite cross by the end of it because of the way Brad portrayed, because he's not an idiot. I think he probably is the social anxiety end of it. We're doing wild analysis. So very, very disappointed. Very cross too.
I think our next caller, Marie, is probably also a bit disappointed in all of this.
Hi, name's Stephen, and is it Bernadette this week? And all Dumpty Dummers, it's Marie from Winchester. Just caught up with all the episodes, been a bit unwell this week. Stephen, I hope you're feeling better, because I know you've been unwell too. Yeah, I just was amazed really at this whole thing with Brad. There's been a lot of comments on Facebook about it. I haven't really been joining in because I haven't known what's happened. But I think very much that Brad did exactly what he was told. But because he hasn't got the common sense to read between the lines, he got things wrong. And I've seen this happen personally in people I know who are academic, well, can we say geniuses, but don't have everyday common sense. It's not that unusual in people who have high academic achievement. And for him to be made to look stupid, I don't think that was actually very nice or very appropriate. And script writers have got it a bit wrong this week, I think. And at the same school, showing how much incredible common sense Chelsea has, brother and sister being incredibly different. Anyway, that's all I've got to say about that. I hope you're keeping well and have a good weekend. Bye for now.
Yeah, that was an interesting point that Marie made at the end about contrast between the brother and sister. And I think that was useful, but it was overwhelmed by the other stuff. And if the instructions had been clearer, perhaps Brad wouldn't have got himself into the pickle that he did get himself into.
So you think it's all Lily's fault?
She was a bit, as a friend of mine would say, up herself, given that she's only an intern or whatever she is. And she did really talk down to him, the tone of her voice, and telling him what to do in a way that for Brad wasn't clear enough. And it's not because she's stupid.
Of course, the other thing that Lily was doing this week was trying to secretly market Lower Loxley to people at Grey Gables, in particular with Harrison and his plans to look for somewhere for the Police Federation ball. And he was looking around Grey Gables, and she was subtly suggesting that Lower Loxley was going to be a better place to do that.
Oh, I like the description of the room that's battleshipy. Spent quite a long time trying to imagine what that would look like. No, luckily, I thought he still wags and tails, but it probably isn't.
Well, it might well be. It certainly, Lily suggested it was very flexible in a way that she thought that Grey Gables wasn't, which surprises me because I would have thought that a newly refurbished hotel would be much easier to make arrangements to change the ambience of rooms and so forth. Whereas Lower Loxley, whatever you do, you're in a Jacobean crumbling country house and you can't really avoid the history oppressing you wherever you go.
Yeah. Oh. And she was out of order trying to market Lower Loxley. And Harrison was slightly menacing, I thought, when he was telling her, you know, that she shouldn't be doing that. But I think he did it tongue in cheek as
yes,
well.
I think he did. I think he was basically warning her off in a way that made sure that she realized she was being warned off without him having to be too explicit about it.
Therefore, Harrison is not as dim as some people like to think he is.
No, I think he's very down to earth. His judgment can be a bit off at times, which gets him into all the sort of trouble that he was in over betraying confidential information.
But his heart's in the right place. And I did tweet, I think, during the week that I think he's in the wrong job.
Yes, it's difficult because he lives in the community and at times finds himself policing that same community, which is problematic. Now, Marie mentioned Chelsea, and I think that was an interesting venture, Chelsea trying to play Natasha off against Kenton. Do you think she's going to get away with it, or do you think that Kenton and Natasha have got the edge on her?
I think she's going to get away with it, but they're going to play her for a bit.
They're making her wait at the moment, aren't they?
That's it. Some people might see it as rewarding bad behaviour, but I don't think it was that bad. People do kind of thing all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a job market. And if two people want you, then it's perfectly reasonable to see who's going to pay you more. And if they both try and hold back, I'm not sure she actually desperately needs the job. Mm. She's still got the work that she's doing at Grey Gables and the hairdressing. So it could be that if they play hardball and try and stop her from playing them off against each other, they will both end up losing out. They need her more than she needs them.
And I think that might be what she's tweaked. And I think one of them will have to give her more money. And I suspect it will be Kenton.
Yes, I think of the two of them, Kenton is the dimmer bulb when it comes to business matters.
Yeah, and Natasha and her Louboutin, those are the red-soled shoes. If she's too hard a business person, whereas Kenton's got a bit of softness about him.
Natasha decides to take a hard line, she'll take a hard line, even if it damages her own business, because it's a point of pride, and she will clippity-clopping around Bridge Farm, insisting that she's done it right, even as the tea room starts falling apart due to lack of staff. And Fallon will not be impressed if Natasha is too proud to take Chelsea on at a slightly higher wage than she initially offered.
Yeah, I think that's right. But I think that's one that's going to unfold, so we won't hear till next week if we're lucky.
Yes. So, those are the first calls. There are a couple more to come, and we'll hear them very soon. And if you would like to join in by calling us yourself, or dropping us a line by message or email, Bernadette is here to tell you how, and all the details are also in the show notes.
Okay, the first option is to record a message or a plot prediction by going to www.speakpipe.com/dumptydum. The next option is to send us a voice note or a message via WhatsApp on 07810012881. It's +44. Remove the first zero if you're calling from outside the UK. And please keep your call to a maximum of 2 minutes. Or finally, if you have an email address you can contact us on if you'd rather write to us with your views. Maximum of 250 words, please. The email address is dumptydum@mail.com. dumteedum@mail.com. Do bear in mind that you need to be at least 18 to contribute.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Now let's get back to our calls. And next up is Jen from Brooklyn.
Hello, everyone from Dumdy Dumland. This is Jen from Brooklyn. And my weird news is about 10 days ago, I sustained a minor concussion when a child kicked a soccer ball and it hit my head. Totally boring way to be incapacitated, but I can't work for 2 weeks. And it's given me lots of time to catch up on the last month or so. Dumpty dum. Somehow I was busy in the meantime. So I'm very, very thankful for audio. I can't watch movies, but I can listen to things, is what the doctor said. What a wonderful art form this is, and I love it. And I think I'm in with the majority. I did take a peek at Facebook. I wasn't really permitted to, and saw that I, like others, did not love the Fawlty Towers episode on Wednesday, and then the follow-up yesterday, Thursday, was stupid. And Brad isn't that bad, so it's not funny enough that they made him look that bad. I have like thoughts about George. I know we're all tired of him, but I think the animal videos are actually quite profitable on TikTok. At least I look at animal videos on Instagram a lot. And also, does anyone remember the name of his dog that had a very biblical name when he was a child? And I'm just remembering how George was very religious and that bothered Emma. And I always found that funny, or made Emma at least uncomfortable. I'm curious where Brad's going to go to school. When do people find that out? In the United States, everyone's finding out where they're going to go to college or deciding. And I guess that's all I have. I also find it funny that George is a business student, because I know when I was an undergrad, we always found those people a bit dodgy too. All right. I hope everyone's having a great week. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for that call, Jen. I'm really sorry to hear about your accident. And I think you said it was about 10 days ago and that you're banned from watching any videos for 2 weeks. So it must be nearly the end of your period of deprivation of video. But of course, having the opportunity to catch up with Dumpty Dums is a secret benefit from all of that. So we can't be 100% sorry that you have stopped from watching stuff, but not being able to work can't be much fun. So I hope you pull through fully. You raised a number of points there. I'm going to start with George's dog. And yes, he went through this very strange religious phase a long time ago. And when Will got a new puppy, he wanted to call it Boaz. Boaz being from the Book of Ruth, the local community leader who found Ruth and took her in and I think eventually married her. It's been a while since I read that particular part of the Bible. So yes, it was an odd choice. Even if you're going to have a biblical name, it does seem odd to choose a fairly minor figure from a fairly short, I think possibly the shortest book in the Old Testament. So it was a very strange thing. That was a phase he went through, but he rapidly came out of it and has very much switched to completely the opposite view. I think he's gone from being under the influence of his great-grandfather, who was a fairly good chapel attendee, despite all Joe's other faults, to the influence of his great-uncle, Al, who was among the worst of the Grundys. And then he ended up stealing money from the collection box, I think. And Al took the blame for that, but it was George who actually did that. So that's an answer to one of your questions.
I had some trouble remembering some of the incidents that I refer to. I'd completely forgotten Boaz, if I actually ever heard it. I do remember the money going missing. I think I was convinced at the time it was George, but then Al stepped up. And because we missed out a lot on George's upbringing, so there might have been other things that he did which could be leading him onto the path that he's doing, or he's just an even little tow rag.
Yes, of course, he also set fire to the postbox time.
Oh, yeah.
No. Brad in university, I think it was left unclear what Brad was going to do, but the feeling was that he was going to end up studying at Felpersham, yes. So that, I think, is what's going to happen. He must be due his A-level results this summer, and that will then confirm where he will go. And I think Mira is also A-levels this summer. So I think we'll know for sure this summer. There's a particular day, and it will no doubt be featured on the programme when everybody gets their results. And that determines whether they've done well enough to get a place at the university of their first choice or whether they'll have to go somewhere else. But I think that we'll find out that Brad is going to go to Felpersham.
Well, I think he made quite sensible argument going to Felpersham as opposed to going somewhere beyond the bypass. But I think Mia will go beyond the bypass.
Yes, I think you're right. I felt that Brad should go somewhere, not as far as Durham, where they went up to visit. I think that's too far. But a bit further than Felpersham might have been good in terms of him spreading his wings. But if he is really suffering from social anxiety, then it might be that Felpersham is far enough away for him to get the full benefits of going away to university, while at the same time being close enough that he doesn't need to manage all the aspects of student life that might get in the way of him actually studying.
And I think it's not to be overlooked, the bit about managing life. And we're expecting people to do it at 18. Some of them just aren't ready. I know plenty of young people who aren't ready. They go a year later and they're fine. Or they do a year, come back home, and then go back, and they're okay. To be minimized, the change. And I think we'll know in August because that's when the results come out, don't they?
Yes, I think it's August. Well, we've got that to look forward to. Next up, we have two calls because Helen called in about the same topic that we've already discussed and then came back with some further thoughts. So here are two calls from Helen.
Hello, it's Helen, but not that Helen, calling in for a second time. I don't normally listen during the week, but I caught two episodes live this week. One was the hideous one in the hotel with Lily and Brad, and I couldn't help but think about Fawlty Towers, and I really could have just renamed them to be Sybil and Manuel. And then I listened the next day thinking that will have just been a one-off, and yet it still continued, and I could still have called them Manuel and Sybil. And it was just really, really awful. And I would be really interested in hearing what Jacqueline and Stephen think about this. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hello, it's Helen here again. Not that Helen. As we heard from Hot Tub Mick on Thursday as well, for the first time in ages, I realised Joy must be due back soon too. And after a great comment in February from T. Brown Artist on Facebook about Joy and Michelle,
I've been thinking a lot about what she said. What if Rochelle doesn't actually exist? What if, in fact, Joy made her up? And that would explain a lot, like the unopen pajamas she happened to have and Rochelle always being too busy to visit. She might have made Rochelle up initially to feel like she could fit in and mask her childlessness, which could be a struggle. And it might not be as traumatic as the example of childlessness in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? And the more I've thought about this, the more I've realised it fits in with a theme generally in Ambridge of dealing with childlessness or not being able to have children. We've had Helen, who wanted one but didn't have the male ingredients for a baby, so she chose to use a sperm donor. Then we had Ian and Adam, who also wanted one and didn't have the female ingredients, and they chose to use a surrogate. But we've also had Alice, who didn't want one, and then she found herself pregnant, and now she's quite happy being a mother. But we've also got Fallon, who we also know, who doesn't want one, and she is choosing not to have one. So how about, to fill that out, we have someone who wants one and struggles with not having one. So the role of Mick now could be that he is a conduit for finding out what's going on. Or perhaps he's complicit in it. I don't know. Food for thought, anyway. Okay, thanks for the podcasts, and bye for now.
The second call is really interesting. And I do love the line about male ingredients and female ingredients. And also Mick of the hot tubs or something. She said a little phrase, which I...
Hot tub Mick, yes.
Hot tub Mick. Yeah, he'll be in my tweet. Yeah, listen, I thought there were some quite interesting points there, and particularly about childlessness. It seems that it's something that's not really allowed in Ambridge and the Archers. You are meant to produce a child unless you're the eternal single woman like Caroline was, and which now seems to be, the crown seems to have been passed a curse. In fact, she was pregnant once, and she...
With Ren, yes.
Yeah, but I think it might be something that could be explored more, but I do hope if they do it, they do it with sensitivity. Mick is a bit of an odd conduit, I think. And something in me says that Rochelle does exist, and there's been some terrible rift between Rochelle and Joy, which may take years to unwind.
Yes, we really don't know, and she has been a consistent, constant presence. Whenever Joy has been around, it hasn't taken that long for Rochelle to be mentioned. And I think the more stressed Joy is, the more Rochelle is mentioned. And it may be, of course, that it's thinking about Rochelle or Rochelle not doing what Joy was hoping for that causes her to be stressed. But around Christmas, most obviously, is when Joy builds her hopes about seeing Rochelle, and then they're always dashed. And I agree. We just don't know whether she's real or not. I think Helen's theory that she is, which I think was originally, as she said, Tracy's theory, that she doesn't exist, is an interesting one. And we just don't see enough of her internal life. And I think that maybe that's what Helen has in mind with Mick, because if there are scenes between Mick and Joy, and we haven't had any particularly in-depth scenes between them. We had some when they first started to meet. But I'm not sure that since they've really got together as a couple, we've seen them alone together. We've seen them engaging with Helen and Lee. But I don't think we've seen them alone together. So maybe when we do, if we do, then we will start to learn a bit more about the reality of Joy's life rather than the front that she puts up. Because one of the features of Joy is she is always putting on the best front for everything. She's always incredibly cheerful and jolly and helping people along, even though I think it's pretty obvious at times that she's probably crying or at least very upset inside. And again, it's the Rochelle business, but she never lets anybody else behind that positive face. And I think that if she gets into a serious relationship with Mick, now that he's got a job in the local area, he might be staying around. I think that if they get serious, then we might start learning more about her.
Yeah, but I thought during the week that Joy might not be happy about him getting a job in the area, because I think she's got a lot to hide. And if he's close by, she might be able to keep it up. But that's just a thought.
That's true. Of course, she's getting a new neighbour by the sound of it.
Oh, yeah. Azra.
Azra is coming to... She can see herself living in Beechwood, which is interesting because, of course, the other person we know living in Beechwood, apart from Helen and Joy, is Vile Kyle, who was carrying on.
Somebody pointed out on Twitter, Azra might have been asking a sort of question in a different way. And when I thought about it, I listened again, I thought, maybe she's asking she'd be welcome as a brown person on Beechwood, but without coming out with it directly.
And that is an interesting point.
I think people do that, though. And if Kyle is still there, well, he's still there, obviously, but if he's vile anyway, he could well latch onto that, a reason to give her some grief.
Yes, or maybe she'll be able to have a conversation with Denise, who is getting used to the area, and the two of them can compare notes about that particular experience.
Yeah, that's true, but Denise doesn't seem to have had, in my hearing anyway, commented on that part of her life and those issues. But I guess we're still getting to know her, the history is yet to unfold.
Yes, and we've seen her addressing other issues like the relationship with Alastair, her relationship with John, her relationship with Paul. So I think there's plenty of scope. As you say, we're only just getting to know them. Denise has only been around for a few years, and in Archer's terms, that's no time at all.
Yes, we've got another 15 years then.
At least. Shall we now have our final call? And this one is from Claire from Clapham.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here. I'm finding it really stressful listening to Alice deal with Harry, and I'm so glad she found the strength to put in a bit of a boundary today. Yeah, she really needs help. I'm incredibly cross that there wasn't any guidance at the end of the programme if you've been affected by anything, et cetera, et cetera. But there you go. I feel for everyone around her as well, because she's lying to people left, right and centre, which is really bad news for her. And they know she's lying to them. Like, they've sent something, which is why they've been on her case, really. The whole GP thing's all very bizarre. I'm not quite sure. Why was she even at the GP? Who knows? But I'm glad that there's been some involvement there. Now, obviously, what might happen is Harry does something really mad or really hurts himself, and she'll feel terrible about it. But she needs to not feel terrible about it, because it's not her problem. And I really hope she can get some of the kind of support she needs around that. And she has to stop lying to people. I just can't bear too much more of it. I think, speaking of things I cannot bear too much more of, stupid farcical episodes. I'm sure you'll get plenty of calls on that, so I'm not even going to go there. But please, let's have sensible, intelligent Brad back. And also, what's he even doing? I thought she was just doing work experience or something. It was like she's running the whole hotel. That's all mad. Anyway, we keep listening, don't we? So we're the fools at the end of the day. But looking forward to seeing everyone at the conference who gets there next week. And I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Thank you for that call, Claire. Yes, we talked a bit about Alice. I think Harry's behaviour was really the last straw, and she just needs to run, and she needs to run fast. I think now Lillian overheard Harry. She's not stupid. She's going to work out what's going on, and she is going to either put pressure on Alice or, I hope, be positive and help Alice to realise that she needs to put herself first. I think it's some of the things that Azra said to Alice about getting away from Harry and just putting herself first and focusing on all of that. I think with Lillian aware of what's going on too, that will help, and I'm sure Lillian will let Kate know. And there will be this ring of people around Alice who know a bit more than Alice currently wants them to, but because they are people who love her very much, they will help her do the right thing, talk to her sponsor, get somebody else to take on Harry. Harry is a problem. Harry does need help, but he doesn't need Alice's help. And I think that she needs to realise that her walking away from him isn't abandoning him. It's just that she's not the right person to do this.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm sorry, it's probably not really good radio, but I do agree with all you've said. But I had a thought in the middle of the night. The Archer, she drives me nuts sometimes. Of course, there's a history of alcohol misuse in the family. And I'm wondering why Lillian isn't really relating to it. But then, of course, you never see your own faults, do you? Because Lillian likes a drop or two, perhaps more than is good for her. Because what we all think of her as the gin queen. Ryan likes his whiskey, doesn't he? So I'm wondering why people aren't well, not Brian, but Lillian particularly, aren't using some of their family history stroke insights into the problem. Although, to be fair to Lillian, I think she's getting there, but slowly, in terms of realizing that Alice has got a problem, not because she's drinking, but because Harry. And did she really hear it was Harry in the episode?
I don't think she heard that it was Harry, but I think that she heard enough to think that Alice is probably not being entirely honest about what was going on. We didn't really get any of Lillian's reaction after Harry broke in, because Alice very quickly hung up. So I think that's something that will come out in the next week or two, what Lillian took away from the call. But we don't know what she took away from the call, but I think that it's unlikely to have been nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I'm left, really.
There they are.
So, those are all our calls. Thank you so much for calling in. We love hearing from you. So, do call again next week if you didn't call this week, or do call again next week if you did call this week, and let us know how you see things developing and whether things turned out the way that you thought they would. Now, did we receive any emails or WhatsApp messages this week?
Yes, we had one email from Chris in Indiana with the subject line, "Oh, Fallon," and it goes like this. "Greetings, friend. This week, Fallon has a Maid Marian fantasy, and I'm torn between wondering if I actually want to hear it played out and knowing I wouldn't. What the hell did those costumes look like that Fallon was so worried about them being found? My ideas are not fit for any decent, self-respecting podcast. Anyway, the Lord Mayor was inspired, and this made me curious about the nature of the Lord Mayor and the size of a city which would have one. Birmingham's webpages state only 23 cities in England have Lord Mayors, so they forgot to mention Felsham, so it must be 24. Also, if Felsham is in the company of Liverpool and Leeds, it must be much larger than I thought. We had speculated about Brad going there for uni, and Stephen has been insistent on it not being the right place, as he has been hard on my friend George Grundy, but Felsham must be pretty large. I actually think the way Brad is doing in the current storyline, even it might be too big for him. Looking for mayors in Indiana, Chris."
Thank you for that email, Chris. It's an interesting point about Lord Mayors, because about 7 years ago, there was a mayor of Felsham, not a Lord Mayor. She turned up at a party that Jennifer threw at Home Farm, and she got extremely drunk and ended up having to be helped to the bathroom by Miranda and spent some time throwing up there, which really made Miranda very disappointed in the evening. It wasn't much fun. But then she was the mayor of Felsham, and being a Lord Mayor seems to be a new development. And as you say, it's only large places that tend to have Lord Mayors, although the Lord Mayor of London is the Lord Mayor for just the City of London, which has only got about 8,000 people living in it. So that's a fairly small area that's got a Lord Mayor, but that's a very long-standing post. Felsham, I think, is in the sort of 100,000 people size. It's not a great big city. It's really just a town a similar size to Oxford or Cambridge or Cheltenham, where I live. The Lord Mayor must be historic rather than a recent decision, the way that some of these big Lord Mayor jobs are.
Well, I checked with Camilla Pargeter One, a.k.a. Connie Nolan, who is in Canterbury, which has just been given city status. So perhaps Felsham has been given city status and they have a Lord Mayor.
But surely Canterbury has been a city since forever, because traditionally cities were places which had cathedrals before this idea of giving them status. So I think Felsham, which also has a cathedral, has always been a city from that perspective.
I was confused, because I've always thought of Canterbury as a city. Partly because of its size and partly because it has a cathedral. That was just my general knowledge.
So they may have changed the rules around how they do this to try and bring everything into line. Because, yes, so there are these bids each year for places to get city status. And I'm never quite sure that it's that big a deal. Particularly if you've got a football team called something or other town, which some places do. If they got city status, that would be a bit confusing.
Yeah. Technicality.
So I think let's not worry too much about Felsham having a Lord Mayor rather than a mayor. But I said, I don't think it's that big. I think it's the size of a typical English town or small city and a typical university town. So I suspect that it's not too bad for Brad, particularly if he's going to be living at home and travelling in each day rather than living in accommodation in Falconshire. But again, we've got all of that to find out.
Well, to me, it's like it would be like people from Thanet going to Canterbury because there's two universities. Well, there's Christchurch, which is actually in Canterbury, and then there's the University of Kent, which is on the outskirts, which has been there a long time. But people do travel to them from this local area.
Yes, exactly. It'll be like that sort of thing. So it would be very likely that Brad would stay at home. As long as he's got room in the house to study, that I can see being a problem. It's quite a crowded house, number 6 of the Green.
And does Ambridge is too small to have a library? Because that's usually a saviour of some kids aren't so well off.
Yes, there's no library in Ambridge. I guess the nearest library will be in Borchester. And we don't know what sort of hours it keeps.
Because one day a week, I know that. Local area.
Yeah. Okay, before we move on to talk about our Facebook page, I wanted to remind people of the Dumpty Dum meetups in the margins of the Academic Archers Conference next weekend. I'm afraid that it's too late to join us for dinner if you haven't already asked to do so. We've confirmed the numbers with the restaurants we're going to. But that doesn't mean you can't join us for a drink or two before dinner. Both nights we'll be meeting up at the Euston Tap, which is, unsurprisingly, near Euston Station. We'll be gathering from about 6 o'clock, 6:30 at the latest, which will give those who are going on to the Dumpty Dum dinners time for an aperitif, which we would be delighted to drink together with any Dumpty Dummers attending the conference or just in the area on the evenings of Friday the 26th or Saturday the 27th of April. So we look forward to seeing as many of you as possible there. Let's move on to Facebook, where we have lots of lovely, busy, friendly and thought-provoking members, and we need to give a very warm welcome to the newest of you, who are Sue Wilcox, Michelle Barrellett, Martha Nagelhout-Sikora, apologise for the pronunciation, I'm sure that was wrong, Helen Duffy, Charlotte Ashton,
Lucy Croft, Joe Graham, Gemma Jane Stockford, Lindsay Marriott, Emma Tapsell, and Leslie Sweeney. So let's hear what our Facebook group has been talking about this week from Michelle.
Hello, I'm your Dumpty Dummers, Michelle again. The West Midlands Mafia still haven't caught up with me. In fact, they seem to have vanished completely, not showing up on front door cameras anywhere, it seems. We've seen some interesting images on the Facebook page this week, though, with Mike Jennings sharing 3 new official photos of the actors portraying Freddy, Jacob and Hannah. Elizabeth Byrne commented, "Jacob and Freddy look nothing like they do on my radio." Meanwhile, lots of listeners were in agreement that Hannah looked just how they imagined, with Amy Alison Brailsford saying that she always imagined her as looking like Mel B from the Spice Girls. We had a first-time post by new Dumpty Dummer, Jackie Baker. Welcome, Jackie. Jackie commented on Alice's interactions with Ambridge's newest general practitioner. Ooh, Alice being warned off Harry by the doctor. Shouldn't she be doing that even? Jackie's not alone in questioning the decision-making of Dr. Malik. Jonah Titchmarsh questioning her caste and professional boundaries and the difference in approach at Alice's appointment compared to the previous appointment with Harry. She's consistent in her inconsistency, it seems. In a replacement for the advertised broadcast, us Poor Archers listeners had an episode of Carry On Portering to listen to on Wednesday night. No one was impressed. Our Stephen asked why the normally bright Brad is being portrayed as the village idiot and why it was Niggy being played as the stupid farce. Sandra Morgan begged, "Please make it stop." Barbara Williams summed it up perfectly in one word, excruciating. Fortunately, the other Horobin sibling, Chelsea, has not suffered a similar personality trauma. Kim Bowyer thinks Chelsea might land herself an even better job before the week is out. Nyla Todd said, "Honestly, I would love to see Chelsea come out of this the winner, with Kenton and Tasha left with egg on their face. Go, Chelsea." Quite right. I wish nothing but positive job scenarios for all of the Horobins next week. That would be fab. Right, I'm off to interview for the security job at Grey Gables. Hope I get a cuppa and some Wiley pastries. Ta-ra, day!
Thank you. Thank you, Michelle, and thank you so much to everyone on the Dumpty Dum Facebook group. If you'd like to join them, please do. But don't forget to answer the very easy membership questions so that we know that you're a real person. Now to Twitter, where you will find us at Dumpty Dum. Make sure you include the Archers hashtag using a capital T and A so that visually impaired who use screen readers can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. As well as at Dumpty Dum, I can occasionally be found at Wenlock House.
And I am Archers_fan2015. And we can both be found following the Archers on Blue Sky, where I am at bernadette1.bsky.social.
And I'm at wenlock.bsky.social. So, let's find out who has won the Twitter medals this week.
Tweet, tweet, Pushcat. Or should that be XX these days?
Hello, Bernadette, Stephen, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with Tweets and Skeets of the Week. And my thanks as ever to Glyn, Jen, Bernadette, of course, and everyone who tags at Dumpty Dum to make sure we see all the best ones. This week, on both Twitter and Blue Sky, we had continuing fun with the naming of the Grundy tree surgery business and whether it was going to be Ultimate Boring Culture or Ambridge Abori Culture. And we also had fun speculating what Miranda was wearing while she admired Kate's unstructured bohemian workwear. Many people were horrified by Grey Gables turning into Fawlty Towers for a couple of episodes, although one or two outliers seemed to find it funny. No one had a good word to say, however, for Brad's sudden idiocy or Lily's overstepping the mark as an intern. But opinion was heavily divided on whether Chelsea was smart or foolish about the two interviews and whether Kenton and Natasha were out of order to compare notes and attempt to penalise her. But now to this week's medals for Blue Sky Skeets and X Posts, all of which we continue to consider for Tweet of the Week. In bronze position, it's Miranda at Apple Android App, with a tweet especially for those who've been following the UK news this week. I was trapped in a room yesterday at 7:02 p.m. with some very bad people making me listen to utter bollocks. Please send money. The silver medalist is LomaLindy12 at lomalindy12.bsky.social. Kate's inner child, Veruca Salt. And the gold medal goes to Charlie Notton at 19CEN. And in tonight's episode of The Archers, the Lord Mayor and her husband check in at the same time as Sergeant and Mrs. Burns. Hilarity ensues as a maths genius and a business whiz try to get the right bags to the right rooms, starring Alan Rickman as Carpet Burns. And on that farcical note, that's it for this week. I hope to see you all on hashtag The Archers on Twitter or Blue Sky next week, and some of you in person at the social events around the Academic Archers next weekend. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for that, Theo, and congratulations to all who are mentioned in this week's roundup.
Jacqueline will be back next week, and she and Stephen will be in London. How's the line? But I will be recording in the crack of dawn before the start of the Academic Archers conference on Saturday morning. So please get your calls in by midnight on Friday, UK time, as usual. And as we come to the end of this episode, we need to say thanks to all our wonderful contributors and to the team of Dumpty Dummers behind the scene. And we need to say a great big thank you to all of you who are listening to us too. We love making this podcast and sharing our love for the Archers around the world.
And we must say thank you to Kim Durham and Sonny Ormond for their voices, and our podcasting parents, Lucy V. Freeman and Roy Field Brown.
Thank you so much for listening and joining us today. We're now off to share our cake with joy. So it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, dumpty, da, da, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum, dumpty, diddly, dumpty, diddly, dumpty, diddly, dum, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered.
Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.